Hello, and welcome to the Astro City Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting Kurt Busiek's Astro City series. In this Astro City Spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to be discussing Astro City, The Dark Age, Book 2. This is actually got a subtitle of Eyes of a Killer. It's number 1 through 4 from 2006-2007. James, how you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you doing, John?
I am doing well. You know, when I was putting together my notes for this, I noticed that when they've got the kind of title page and stuff, each of these books actually has a title to it.
Oh, I wasn't even paying attention.
I certainly didn't notice that on the first one, and I'm like, well, then why isn't it just called Dark Age Book 2? Why not on the cover put Eyes of the Killer or whatever, or Eyes of a Killer?
That would make more sense. It'd make it more noticeable, at least, to the reader.
So, I mean, it doesn't make that big of a difference, but it was just kind of interesting marketing, branding, titling, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, maybe they didn't want to make one of those long titles, you know? All that. The Dark Ages, does it stick with the two characters, I'm assuming now? The brothers?
Yes. Yes, it does.
Okay. All right. All right. So, and it's all in the 70s. All right. I'm starting to see the theme here. All right.
I think it moves a little forward. I don't remember how far forward it gets by the book four. But yeah, we stick with these two guys, Charles and Royal Williams.
That's a lot of issues because, not that they're disinteresting characters, but you feel like you don't want to devote that many issues to just these two. They don't seem, you know, that key. And there's so many other stories that can be told in Astro City.
Well, and we are getting a number of other stories kind of hinted at in the periphery and stuff like that. And I mean, part of it for me was it covers about a 5-year period.
Yeah, a lot of time.
It's a lot of time. Now, we do have the Samaritan special that takes, and we'll cover it in a couple issues after we've done book four, or a couple of episodes after we've done book four. But that's a 40-page story between books one and two of The Dark Age. Between 2 and 3, we've got Astro City Beauty, and then between books 3 and 4, we've got 2 issues for Astro City Astra, and then after book 4, which feels like it's a follow-on to this, we've got Silver Agent 1 and 2.
Okay, all right. So a lot of little titles in between.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's either a 40 or 48-page story, and it's interesting. The 48 ones, they split into two parts. The 40, they do as one, so whatever. But yeah, for the majority of 5 years, we're focused on these two guys.
Charles and Royal, wow.
They're not bad characters, but they're not such great ones I want to spend 5 years with them.
Yeah, that's what I meant by when I was saying that. It's not that they're bad characters. There's cool things, there's intricacies, there's tension there, but they're not that interesting. Ultimately, at the end of the day, I'm like, huh, I'd rather see maybe a little more of the superheroes or some other stories besides these two. I can see why it gets long in the tooth as you get to the third and fourth volume.
Yeah, yeah. And hopefully I'll like it a little more this time around. I didn't hate it before, but I didn't love it, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. Well, let's jump into the second one.
Book two, yeah.
Yeah, book two.
So we start with this first issue, and I find it kind of interesting because we start with, okay, it's 1976.
Yeah.
And then we get all these little snippets of, okay, Starfighter and the Honor Guard have gone and saved some planet from some alien armada. They get a reward of seeing the birth of a new generation of Universals.
Bum, bum, bum. Yeah.
Is it like the new gods or the Eternals or who knows? I mean, it's just broad brushstrokes here.
Yeah, it almost seems like that wall or something you'd see with the new gods or something.
Yeah, you know, the source wall. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It definitely seems like it's playing in the Kirby area.
Yes, exactly. That's the total vibe I got.
And then we get a little bit more of the first family doing this interdimensional tour or whatnot. Star Woman's back on Earth, so apparently she hadn't been. We get a little with the Apollo 11. So we get all these little snippets of things are happening, but that's not the story we're going to focus on.
Yeah, exactly. We even get introduced to like some cool new characters, like the Jade Dragons.
Mm-hmm.
Because they pop up in here. But literally, the whole script flips to just the two brothers. They show you this cool stuff, but you don't really get to experience much of it.
Well, and it's funny because I was finding a lot of these side characters that were kind of filling out the story, so to speak. I mean, they're more pivotal to it than just that. I found them a lot more interesting than Charles or Royal. I mean, the Jade Dragons, that read to me like it had to have been inspired by the Danny Rand Iron Fist and Colleen Wing.
Yeah, yeah, I totally. And the graphics I was seeing in there, it could have been either from Twin Dragons or Double Dragon, the video games and stuff like that, because that was all in the 80s. And it just totally had that vibe. You feel that stuff in there.
Yeah. And Royal is now working for a different crime lord, I guess, which is Joey the Platypus Platypotopoulos. That last name goes on for a few days. Jeez.
Yeah, it does. And he has a very misshapen face.
Yeah. To me, that was clearly inspired by the Penguin, or probably, I don't know, half, if not all, of the Dick Tracy Rogues Gallery.
Yeah, yeah. It was kind of an interesting thing, because the Platypus is seeking help from the higher-ups, and Royal's just kind of like a street-level goon in this crime syndicate that's going on here.
Oh, yeah, and he knows. It's not so much that he's out of his weight class, but he's certainly in over his head, or at least his safety comfort living. He knows where he's gotten is deeper than he wants to be, and this cannot possibly end well for him.
Exactly. Because there's a battle between two different crime groups that are vying over the same territory, basically in Astro City at this point, and it's not going well for Platypus, so they have to call the higher-ups, and the higher-ups are sending in some weight their way.
Yeah, what was that? Jitterjack the Divided Man?
Yeah, he comes up in, I think it's issue 2, but yeah, Jitterjack, I was like, which kind of, he reminded me of Harvey Dent, Two-Face.
It's funny, because when they mention they're going to bring Jitterjack in, when we first get to the Down Under Club,
yeah,
there's mention of having gotten half the receipts tonight, half guns, Gunbirds had gotten the other half, and that just reinforces the whole Two-Face kind of mindset.
Exactly. Yes, completely.
And then it seems like later, this half-gun may have gotten renamed to Tommy Gun. I don't know, but there's definitely a couple of things leaning towards the whole Two-Face as an inspiration for some of this story. In addition to, obviously, the Underground Club is the equivalent of the Iceberg Lounge that the Penguin has.
Yeah. Also like that they gave us another storyline here, which involves Charles. Not only his girlfriend, which we saw, was her name Darnice, I think it was?
Darnice, I think, yeah.
Yeah, Darnice. But we also get to see that there's some crime and corruption going on within the police in Astro City.
Yeah, because Charles has started working for Major Crimes.
Yeah.
He's got a new partner of Laney, and that guy is clearly on the take.
Yes, he is.
And Charles is like, don't want to know about it. Don't tell me about it. And that's kind of his subplot for this issue of, can he stay on the up and up when apparently a decent number of cops in Astro City are not?
Yeah. And I understand, you know, like we've seen these stories before. And Darnice, oh my God, being who Darnice is, you just see this evil woman who's just shopping, 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 spending all their money. Charles is trying to save up for a home at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And basically coming to her, hey, babe, you're spending all of our money on shoes and clothing and this and that. Well, Lanny says, so she knows about the corruption and wants him to partake. What an evil woman.
Well, and this goes to Royal having called it on her being a gold digger.
Yeah. He should have listened to his brother. His brother, for all of the bad qualities, him being a criminal, he always is looking out for his brother's interests. He's always looking up for Charles's best interest.
Well, and it goes both ways. Charles has done that for Royal a number of times.
Yeah, looking the other way instead of arresting him. Oh, you know, ha ha ha.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're at the end of the day, they're brothers.
Well, and it was interesting how some of these things were definitely paralleling, because we would see each in a bar talking to people. It'd be different bars, different conversations. But while these two haven't talked in a while, they're still on parallel paths, one on the ostensibly the side of good, with the other ostensibly on the side of bad, even though each, I think, kind of leans in the other direction a little bit at times.
Yeah, yeah, which was kind of cool. I liked the interplay there. It worked for me. I enjoyed the story at this point through the first issue. You know, we get all these things. It's just like, it's a lot of issues for these two characters.
It is.
But at the same time, it's good stuff.
What did you think of Street Angel?
I kind of like Street Angel. I thought it was a cool character. I mean, does he remind you of someone?
Yeah, he does.
Who's he remind you of?
I'm going to go with Robin / Nightwing.
Yep. I was going to say the face mask gave me the Nightwing vibe completely. So that's who I took him as.
Well, and when we see his original costume in the 60s, it actually looks a lot more like Dove than Robin, but still, it's got that attitude, that energy, and stuff like that. And they seem to be going on the, he was the happy-go-lucky, wisecracking, street-level hero back then.
Yeah.
Now, instead of having hard rubber halos that could knock somebody out, trick halos of other sorts to go with, again, the street angel aspect, now he's got bird-shaped throwing stars or something.
Yeah, which was kind of cool. I like that.
I loved it when Royal got one of the halos, picks it up, and he's like, this is high-impact ceramic over a steel core.
Yep.
This guy is aiming to knock out teeth and stuff like that.
He's causing damage on purpose. Yes, he is. Like, kind of like a rubber bullet. It's not really that spongy when it hits you.
I took it as shifting from a rubber bullet to a real bullet.
Yeah, exactly. Rubber bullets, they can kill people, believe it or not. People talk about the non-lethal things, but if it hits you right, it'll take you out.
People have been killed by blanks.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Black Velvet, who is that supposed to be? Because I saw this character as maybe someone from Black Hammer, but who is this?
I took this as being inspired by Raven.
Okay, all right, Raven. All right, I can see that.
Because somebody who had a very rough childhood, who's got magic, mystical, maybe sort of dark, you know, shadowy type powers, can... I couldn't tell what she did with the guy when his skeleton lit up. I mean, did she kill him? Did she torture him? What did she do? But it felt evocative of.
Yeah, I almost thought she irradiated him, but it's tough to tell. Who knows?
We don't get a clear shot of the guy afterwards. We just get her kind of flying off and Royal kind of watching. But I don't know if that guy survived or not.
Exactly. I don't know. It almost looked like something I would see in Geiger, the way he's lit up like that and you just see the skeleton. And I was assuming the flesh was all burnt away.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like it very well could have been. The guy was literally fried.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, that all built up to, they set up all this stuff. The last page was pretty interesting with the choices the guys had. Did you like that? I loved it.
I thought it was interesting. And again, it goes to these guys being on parallel paths of Royal's gotten in a little deeper than he wants with the bad guys. He usually hangs to the side and they're like, nope, you got to step up. And they're handing him a gun.
Yep.
And then Charles's partner's like, we can't have you on the fence. Either you're in or you're out, handing him an envelope full of money.
Yeah, $100 bills. Because ultimately, the guy who's too good and above it will be the weak link if internal affairs comes asking.
Mm-hmm.
This is me thinking a criminal mind. Hey, we're all on the take except for this guy. This is the one. And they can sniff out the guy who's going to flip the rat. And so, like, you're going to take two, so you're not going to say anything. And based on if you take or not here, you may or may not make it out of this situation alive.
Yeah, yeah. This is definitely a turning point moment for both brothers.
Yep. So I thought that was kind of cool. I mean, like, we've seen this in crime shows. We've seen this. Corrupt cops. The good guy, the guy who's a bad guy, but not that bad. He's kind of good. And shades of gray. That's what we're dealing with.
The part that gets me is, I think it's crazy enough for, like, the Platypus and the gang wars going on in Astro City to be happening in Astro City.
Yes.
Gotham, sure. That's a hellhole. That's Gotham City. Astro City has tons of heroes, and they haven't cleaned this up?
Literally, all the heroes are here, so...
Yeah. And then you look at the corrupt cops in Astro City. This seems like a really bad place to be a cop on the take.
Yeah, you got people who can hear you with super hearing, who can see you with vision that they can see from far away. There's superheroes everywhere. What are you doing?
Yeah, it begs the question as to how this could happen in this city.
Yeah.
And granted, it's the 70s. It was a different time. There probably weren't as many heroes. There wasn't as much information flow as there is now. But it still felt more Gotham than Astro, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I know exactly what you mean. And honestly, there's something to be said for almost all, I don't want to say all, but most good crime things, you know, crime stories and crime movies and movies about murder and stuff like that. They always take place in the 70s and 80s when cell phones and cameras are not readily accessible because that changed society, essentially, you know, it really did.
Yeah.
But the way things play out back in the past, this is how it happened. Envelopes and cash, things like that.
Anyone who has not, because of their age, watched primetime crime dramas in like the late 70s, early 80s, should. Go catch like a couple episodes of Simon and Simon, Magnum P.I., or something of that ilk.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's always, well, the guy didn't know because he didn't have a phone. He was out of touch. So, but somebody else knew the information he needed when he needed it. If only they could have gotten it to him. Or, you know, you got to go to this address and look around or whatever. Or I got to go to the records office to go find the address, to go dig through this, to go actually get to the address and all this stuff. Things that today, cell phones obliterate most of those subplots and little bits of business.
Yeah, the world has changed. I had a police officer give me a call last year. He's like, "Hey, is this James?" I'm like, you know, I'm like, "Yes." He's like, "You have a red Tesla?" I'm like, "Yes." He's like, "Were you at this gas station?" It's like a gas station convenience store on this date. I'm like, "No, I never go to a gas station. I drive a Tesla." He's like, "That's all I needed." I basically, which tells me they got it down to there's two or three red Teslas and I wasn't there. So it was the other guy, and they probably thought it was him, you know, cameras. They picked up the car. So it's crazy how everything's under surveillance now. And they could call Tesla probably and subpoena that and know exactly where your vehicle is.
Well, one of the shows my sister and I did episodes on was The Capture. It's set in London, where, again, they've got everything under CCTV coverage.
Yeah.
And it was a fascinating show.
Yeah. Like being over in London, you're always on camera, no matter where you are.
So it definitely, if you haven't checked out the show, listen to the episode, see what you think. They're not long seasons, like 6-8 episodes, but it's some good stuff.
Awesome.
All right. So shall we move over to the second issue?
Yeah, the second issue where we get to see Jitterjack finally.
Now, I want to stop on the cover for just a second. This is the Apollo 11.
Who played a minimal thing in the book.
How many people do you see on the cover?
Not 11.
I only count to 10.
Yeah, 10. Where's the Apollo 11th?
I haven't bothered to figure out who's all's in the Apollo 11, but they don't all seem to be here. So I just thought that was kind of weird. So the Apollo 11 show up, but, I mean, having read this entire book, I still don't really feel like I know who all's in the team.
Yeah, we don't know who's in the team, and they play such a minimal amount of time, screen time or page time, that I'm surprised they put them on the cover other than the artist wanted to draw them. It's just very weird.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But I'll tell you what, with every one of these books, we're now up to 1977, so we're kind of moving at a speedy clip here.
Yeah, we seem to be bumping about a year an issue, I think, at least in this book. And we catch up with Royal. Things are getting a little messy in Astro City. The group he's hanging with is killing some people, and he's hanging back. And then there's this big thing that just shows up over town.
Yeah. It's like a big clear guy.
I took this as being inspired by, you know, Galactus or like a Celestial or something like that over at Marvel.
Yeah.
I can't really think of a good DC equivalent for this.
No, it's definitely like that big overseer Galactus. Yeah, something like that.
So that is kind of a backstory here. And it's funny because it was a big deal the day it showed up. But then everyone was, yeah, well, it's not doing anything. Let's move on. Which was just kind of funny.
Yeah, everyone's just like, let's just keep going about our business.
And then we get Hellhound showing up, and he's fighting, the Dominoes?
Yep.
Black costumes with pips on them. It's like, wow, that's scary. We find out that Charles has been doing some digging in the records room to learn more about this stuff. I mean, there's a two-page splash here where we get some of the files of the Brain Trust, the Jade Dragons, Energy Brown, Hellhound, Bamboo, Joey Platypus. I mean, you name it, we got a ton of stuff. Tommy Gunn, I think, is one of them too.
Yeah, a ton of characters. They're all just kind of laid out there. It's really tiny print. You can read it if you want to, but a lot of it's cut off. It's not really essential to know the story.
Yeah, but there's a couple of things here and there that I'm sure are juicy tidbits to be dug out if I wanted to, but I'm lazy.
I saw that text. I'm like, I'm not reading that.
Yeah. Well, that to me, that's the thing, is you don't have to read it, but I love that they put the time into writing it. So if you do read it, there's something there.
Versus just having little scribble marks or, you know, symbols or whatever. Just
Greeking it with the Ipsum Lorem stuff.
Yeah.
Which is technically Latin, not Greeking, but it's called Greeking because, you know, printing.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a fun little page. But when he finally leaves the record room, he's getting hassled by IA, and he's like, I'm not going to spill the beans on him. Charles is stuck between the guys on the take and IA. And at this point, it's really not until he gets home that we find out that, one, it's empty. Two, Darnese has left him. And three, she left him because he's not on the take.
Yeah. Surprise, surprise. She left them with literally like a folding chair and a TV as the only furniture.
I don't think she left those. I think he got them after she left.
Yeah. She took everything then. I felt bad for this guy because I know people who've been through this. I'm like, that's rough. It's rough. You come home, everything's gone.
Yeah. I can't imagine a bigger betrayal.
Yeah, exactly. But honestly, getting someone like that out of your life, she was a cancer, he'll be better in the long run.
Yeah, yeah. I am curious if we see her again later. I got to imagine that we will. And again, it's been long enough ago since I've read these, because I read them when they came out, so nearly 15 years ago now. I don't remember the specifics of where her character, if she's seen again or not.
Okay, cool.
But we learned that Big Joe, that thing in the sky, is apparently growing like a nervous system.
Yeah, you see all the little nerves going out, and I guess it's going to start solidifying, for lack of a better term.
So, kind of creepy.
Very creepy. You're like, what is going on here? All right, it's growing.
And then we find out that Black Velvet is apparently hunting people who done her wrong in the past.
Yeah, interesting. So she's like literally hunting people down the street to glow them. I don't know what term we're going to use. Eviscerate them. Get rid of them in some way.
The other character she's kind of based on, I think, is Black Orchid.
Okay.
Because the costume design is very reminiscent.
Yeah, I could see that. I can see that for sure.
Definitely, it seems to be, in my mind, leaning DC-wise, although the Shadow Force sort of a power is whatever. But then we get Deke, the number two guy for the Platypus, meeting with other mobster crime lords. I'm not entirely sure who or what here.
Yeah, that's not good that he's meeting with someone else.
And they're like, hey, give my best to Joe, the Platypus. And he's like, yeah, under the circumstances, I don't think I will. I'm like, yeah, I guess you won't. Implying Deke is certainly working against the Platypus's interests, and we definitely see where that goes over the course of these issues. Actually, that's Tommy Gunn.
Oh, that's Tommy Gunn?
It's not clear when he's lighting a cigarette, but in the next panel,
His
hand is a gun.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I see that now.
I missed that until just now.
Well, thanks for pointing it out.
They never call him Tommy or Mr. Gunn or anything.
I just thought it was some random dude.
Yeah.
I mean, some random mafioso. I shouldn't say dude, but...
No, I guess they do say, with all due respect, Mr. Gunn.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Gunn. There it is.
They could have been clearer.
Yeah. Okay. All right, cool. Wow. The trail.
We had some stuff, both in the previous issue and here, where the gang warfare had been going into Platypus' casinos. And in, I guess it was the... Was it this issue? This one with the domino guys get attacked by Hellhound.
Yeah.
That's taking place in one of Platypus's casinos. Royal not only makes it out of there, but he grabs a bag. That bag happens to have not only all of the night's take, but all of the stuff the dominoes had been stealing from the customers, and he hands it over to Platypus. So Platypus is like, hey, he's the guy. The rest of you guys, this is who you ought to be emulating.
You gotta be like this guy, Royal.
And Royal's like, not happy to be the center of attention whatsoever, because he wants out, but not enough to actually get out.
Yeah. It's weird, because he doesn't know any other life. I wouldn't say that. He can look at his brother, but his life has always been in crime. He has a record, and this is who he is. He doesn't want to be doing it, but at the same point, he doesn't want to be roofing, let's say. I don't know what he could do if you have a criminal record other than like repairing roofs, working in construction. That's it.
Well, he wants to get out. He's not sure how, but he knows his current life choices are not healthy in the long run.
Yeah.
And to underscore that, Deke comes in and says the delivery from Chicago is here because Jitterjack has arrived. And there's guys dressed up, one in a suit with one of the pyramid logos by the collar, two guys in pyramid thug outfits, I guess.
Yeah, almost like they're Egyptians or something. You're like, what is that?
Yeah. And they're wheeling in what looks like a sarcophagus kind of a thing.
It was really weird.
And then they open the thing, and out comes Jitterjack, who's a little... I mean, he's two people fused together.
Which is bizarre.
And one looks to be, I don't know, like a Army Ranger kind of a guy. The other looks to be almost, I don't know, Aboriginal warrior or something.
Yeah, that's a good way. I was to say almost like a Native American, like a Apache warrior or something. I don't know what he is.
Take Turok and the Punisher slam them into one person in presumably a very painful way.
Yeah, with some nice scarring down the chest and face.
Yeah.
And that's him. And he, literally, when they pop him out of the sarcophagus, he kills one of the gang members. Boom.
Yeah, and the pyramid guy's, oh, sorry about that. He's a little frisky when he's loose. My guy should have gotten on top of it faster with the stun sticks. I'm sorry. And Royal's no idiot. He's like, no, that was not an accident. That was a show of power.
Yeah.
So this Aubrey Jason guy, who's a tiger-level pyramid officer versus whatever the other thugs were, he was letting the platypus know who's in charge here.
Yeah, we're in charge, and we can take you all out in an instant. That's basically the message that was sent, and I believe him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and there's also an indication that Royal doesn't like something about this Aubrey Jason guy. He just can't put his finger on it at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Right here, he doesn't know, but that comes to light later on.
Yeah. And at this point, this is when Big Joe, that big thing, is kicking up the wind, pulling up dirt, garbage, leaves, whatever, and building a body.
Yeah, out of junk, which was so weird. And out of that body comes the, whatchamacallit?
The Apollo 11.
Yeah. And I'm just like, how does that work? I don't understand what happened there. But that big body, I guess, is the 11th member?
That's what I'm starting to think, too.
Yeah. I think those are the 10, the little ones we saw on the cover, and the 11th, we couldn't see him because he's too big, because that's him.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, because he never seems to have a physical body. He's always still glowing and whatnot. But yeah, he emanates these guys, and they're like, oh, it's too soon. It's not time yet. And instantly, Eagle troops arrive to take the Apollo 11 in.
That was so weird, wasn't it?
It was fast. It was oddly fast.
Oddly fast, and that's them. Boom, you saw it happen and move on.
Well, and the Apollo 11 is like, yep, let's get the hell out of here. A couple of the guys clear a path and they're gone. And then we cut to a TV interview of Simon Magus.
Yes.
And I get that there's a lot of information that has to get doled out in this kind of a series. So TV interviews, TV reports, that's a go-to thing. Simon Magus, I don't know that this was the best introduction for him, although we'd gotten a little of him last book.
Correct.
But he's like, oh, this is not the end, you know, kind of a thing. And it getting summarized by the interviewer here is, yep, it's just the beginning. It's like, that's not what was said. But we use that to segue from the interview on TV through a TV into a bar where Charles is and the IA guy is hitting him up for information.
Yeah, it's relentless. So you can imagine the stress he's under. He's got the stress of his partner, who's almost forcibly putting him on the take, and the IA people who know he's the weak link and know he's a good guy, and he's close to cracking, you can tell right here.
Yeah, and he basically tells the IA guy, just get the hell out.
Yeah, out, out!
But this is clearly a cop bar that was happening in.
Yeah, and by them doing that, making that big show, people are going to be suspicious, is he working with IA? And you see all their eyes are looking at him, but when the IA officer walks out the door.
Oh, yeah. I think this was an instigating incident for what happens later.
Basically, hey, you want to trust yourself with those guys or you want us to offer you protection?
Yeah. Well, again, which side are you on? You can't stay in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. You can't.
We then cut back to the platypus's place and Royal doesn't have to pay for the drinks. He's going to report straight to the platypus or Deke. You know, he's on his way up because this guy is going places.
Yeah.
And Royal's happy to take the drink, but I think wants the hell out of there. But then the guy from Pyramid, Aubrey Jason, comes up and talks to him, either seeing potential or whatever, and gives a little of his backstory, saying when he was early in Pyramid, he doesn't flat out say he torched an apartment, but he says it wasn't easy. I rolled with the punches. I learned. Here I am. You know, don't sell yourself short. You've got a future, kid. But that's enough to trigger Royal's memory that this is the guy who killed his parents.
Yeah, he remembers, hey, we were these kids hiding behind the mattresses and our parents were dead. And I don't know what it was that triggered it. Like you said, he didn't out and out say it, but he alluded to it. Maybe the sound of the voice.
The voice, the scar is definitely some of it.
And yeah. Scar on his face, yeah. And he's like, this is the guy. And now that flips, you know, the face of the man who killed our parents. Boom.
And again, this is an interesting way to end the issue because Charles is back at the decision point, not so much of does he get on the take or not, but does he go to IA or does he get on the take? and kind of taking the quandary from last issue and kicking it up a notch. And here, Royal's quandary from last issue of take the gun kind of kicks up to a notch of now does he have incentive to use the gun?
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
So definitely some interesting stuff happening here.
Yeah, I agree. And then in volume 3, did you like the way it started?
Issue 3,
yeah.
Still on book 2. We don't want to confuse volumes, books, issues. It's so many terminology. Sorry.
Issue 3. Book 2, issue 3. Did you like it with Doctor Strange? They're like, hey, Simon Magus is Doctor Strange, basically. Because House even looks the same.
Oh, he is so, so clearly Doctor Strange.
Yeah. It's telegraphed. And I like that girl we saw in here that they introduced us to.
Grimoire,
yeah. I was like, how do you say her name? Grimoire works for me because I don't know how to pronounce it, but...
The alternate pronunciation might be Clea.
Clea, that works too, yeah.
From Doctor Strange.
Exactly. Clea works. But I tell you what, I thought that was so cool. Like, she has, like, these full body of, like, runes tattooed all over her. And she disrobes and they start doing their thing. And the runes take off. And I'm like, that is cool. I don't know what's going on, but it's very interesting.
Well, the captions imply that she wrote a book in the 80s after Magnus had disappeared.
Yeah.
Claiming to have been the real power behind him. That he was just channeling it, but she was the source of it.
Exactly. So I'm guessing that's him recharging?
Sure.
That's what I'm like. I don't know exactly what was happening, but it was kind of cool. I liked it.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting. And again, evocative of Doctor Strange and Clea without being duplicative of those two.
Yeah, they're very different. Very, very different, but you know exactly who it is. Even the little house, you know, you're like, come on.
Yeah. Well, and again, they find the core aspects of various characters and play with those, take them apart and reassemble them in ways that generate new characters that you can see where they were drawing inspiration from. But it's not like, say, Supreme over at Image.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's one thing that when you take Superman and say, okay, we're going to rename him, it's not going to be called Kryptonite. It'll be called, you know, some other knight, a different home planet, and maybe change the hair color and the costume color. But otherwise, it's the same character.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't have that level of cheapness here. There's some really well thought out stuff of, okay, you've got the mage, the magic user archetype. How can we take that apart? How can we put it together and have something that's similar-ish to, but again, not repetitive of?
Exactly. Yeah, very cool.
Now, this is where we get Hellhound clearly having known the original Jack in a Box, because he comes across Jack in a Box as he's fighting the Shaders.
The Shaders, a bunch of dudes in black.
Who apparently can materialize in and out of shadows, maybe?
Exactly. That's the way I took it. And it was a nice little team up between the two. They were doing a good job, and I liked that they got along. I'm like, this is fun. And then, boom, Jitterjack shows up.
Yeah.
Kind of wallops Hellhound.
Well, and Jack in a Box, but leaves them alive because apparently his mission was to go kill all of Bamboo's thugs.
Exactly. Yeah. Boom. And like literally they're all laid out. He takes out that whole group of people, which the superheroes you're thinking, are they thinking, thanks or why?
I think they're a little surprised just how messy it got.
It got really messy. There's blood splatter or black splatter in this matter.
Yeah.
They're dead.
Very much so, because their bodies are in body bags getting loaded into an ambulance and stuff. Like, a lot of them into the same ambulance. Not like a, we need to treat one of them sort of way.
Yeah.
So, and this gets us to having Charles in the story, because he's part of that cleanup crew. We find out he's going on a date, since he's split with Darnese. The date does not go well. Because, at this point, Charles is pretty much just kind of checked out of life.
Yeah, he's downtrodden and just... I can imagine under stress and all alone and just feeling like, what's the point at this juncture in his life?
Well, and this is where I had mixed feelings on the use of the narrative captions, some by Charles, some by Royal, because we get some of each saying, oh, if I only could talk to my brother.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You could. You just have to go do it.
Yeah. You know where he is. Go find him.
So we basically are seeing a ramping up of
the gang war and stuff.
Yeah, the gang war. And the platypus is a little upset that Jitterjack killed all of the thugs on both sides versus just wanting one side to think the other side was after him because it was two rival gangs he was trying to pit towards each other. But now that they're both dead, they're not going to look at each other. They're going to look in his direction. So he's not happy about that.
Exactly. And so he is definitely distraught. The attention is going to come his way. But that's kind of exactly the way I think they want it.
Yeah. And then we cut to another TV report of a dead body over in Lake Michigan near Milwaukee, identified as this one doctor who apparently had created people with powers, including, it seems like, Black Velvet.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting. Told through TV.
So again, exposition's got to come out somewhere. I just think this is a little heavy-handed on some of that.
It is. That was the part I didn't like, the TV dump. Just, it didn't work for me.
Yeah, I was not a big fan of it. I did find it interesting that at this point, Charles is kind of thinking it's hard to tell the good guys from the bad guys.
Yeah, it's funny.
And when did it go from they were fighting crime to the never-ending getting revenge on whoever fought you last?
Pretty much, yeah. He's so disillusioned with everything, and he was honestly the quote-unquote good guy. And now he's questioning everything at this point in his life.
Well, and his partner confronts him of, hey, we got to talk. And he's like, nope, no, we don't. And at that point, I guess the sergeant on duty or whatever says, okay, it doesn't matter if you were off duty or on break or whatever. Everybody's on duty. We've got a sighting of Black Velvet and Street Angel because Black Velvet is assumed to be a killer at this point. Go find them.
And they're off to the races. Let's go.
Yeah.
And you see Street Angel and Black Velvet basically chasing each other.
He's chasing her.
Yeah. And basically having a big talk, you know, after he knocks her down and catches up to her. But it's not playing out very well.
It's kind of weird because he's like, well, I don't kill. And she's like, oh, really? How many people have you left for dead given the injuries you've given them?
Exactly. Like, you never think about it. Like, let's think of a Batman type character or Nightwing in this case.
Mm-hmm.
Breaking people's ribs. You don't know if it punctured their lungs. You don't know if you thought you knocked them out, but the back of their head hit the concrete and they died. And basically, Black Velvet is saying all these things that you're doing, which you're saying, I'm not killing people. You may have inadvertently killed dozens of people that you don't know about.
Yeah. And she's like, I didn't corrupt you. Maybe you just liked it.
Yeah.
And he is just totally taken aback by that and literally stunned by the revelation. And I guess she hits him with a blast of whatever her powers are.
Yeah. It didn't electrify him or light him up, but yeah, knocked him down.
And in come the police and start shooting at him and stuff because that'll help. And basically, they can't keep up with those two, and that's fine. But Charles's partner comes after him. It's like, nope, we got to talk. And Charles is like, I'm not going to talk to IA. I don't want to be on the take. Leave me out of it. Do whatever you want.
You can see the other cops in that circle standing over there. They heard that.
Yeah.
And they're going to be telling him, hey, he's got to be taken out. At this point, that's what you're thinking. I'm thinking.
To me, Lainey was trying to reach out to Charles, potentially to save his life. We then cut to more TV stuff. A little more on Black Velvet and the whole series of deaths, the killings and stuff. We get a little bit of Apollo 11 at the UN trying to tell humanity, hey, we're offering you a place in the stars. Why are you throwing rocks at us? Are you nuts?
Exactly.
The First Family's back from their interdimensional goodwill tour. And it's funny because I think the Apollo 11's origin is, again, a riff on the Fantastic Four's. But here, it's kind of, and they don't get loved by the mass populace, whereas the First Family clearly does.
Yeah, it's true. Yep.
And the First Family seems to get shanghaied off pretty quickly, and I wasn't entirely sure why, to go look at this ancient artifact, Incan ruin, or I don't know what.
Yeah, like, as I say, Mayan, Incan, something, Aztec, who knows?
Something.
Something like that.
And they wind up going deep down into it and discovering this thing.
Which is like a rifle-looking thing.
Yeah. And as soon as the Reed Richards equivalent picks it up, in comes Simon Magus to explain that it's the innocent gun and it's very powerful. Be very careful with it. You know, don't just go tampering with it and stuff. You got to hang on to it. But again, be careful. And he's like, well, we got to talk about something right now. And he's like, no. Demon's attacking. Let's go deal with that. So again, it felt akin to the sort of interaction you might have had between Doctor Strange and the Fantastic Four and stuff like that. But then it seems like all hell breaks loose over Astro City.
Exactly. Yeah. Everything's going on. Everyone's fighting, ultimately.
Yeah, because we see Street Angel, we see Black Velvet, we see
Cracker Jack.
Jack in a box.
Jack in the Box. God, why did I say Cracker Jack? Jack in the Box. Like, everyone's there fighting.
Yeah, so it definitely seems like all stuff's going on. And as we leave Black Velvet, her line of dialogue is repeated on an earpiece that Deke has as Royal comes in asking, hey, can you give me a recommendation to somewhere to work, like, outside of Astro City? Because I don't think this town's for me anymore. You know, maybe L.A., San Francisco, something like that. And Deke's like, well, you know, I can do that, but tell you what, wait 2 weeks, and if you still want to go, I'll set you up wherever you want.
Yep.
And just literally pushes him out the door.
Yep. Tosses him out.
And Royal's thinking, I don't believe him, and I'm not sure I'm going to survive the 2 weeks.
Exactly. That's what I'd be thinking.
Then things get really interesting because a guy materializes in an alley in a trench coat and a hat, and under that is the Silver Agent.
Yeah. At first, when I was looking at it, I was like, who in the heck is that? And then I saw the helmet and his, the crook of his arm.
Yeah. But then we cut over to the cops again, and they're investigating a transfer point for guns and stuff, and Charles gets shot in the back by the cops.
Yeah. They literally start looking at each other like, now, now. And then, boom, boom, he didn't take the money, you take the bullets in the back. There you go.
And they're like, it's like, hey, I didn't think you were going to talk to IA, but we had to be sure. Sorry. And they walk off. So he's left for dead.
Yep. If you're put in that situation, do you take the bullets in the back? Or do you take the cash? Do you go to IA? Maybe he should have just gone to IA and just gotten out. But then your career's over. You, nobody trusts you. None of the cops do on the force. It's such a tough situation.
Well, you also run the risk of, if you had taken the money, getting in too deep that you can't get out, and or it having been an entrapment thing by internal affairs.
There's no good decision here, and he took the high road and took the bullets in the back, unfortunately.
I think Charles had pretty much been doing the right thing. Granted, his attitude, I think, needed a lot of work.
Yes.
But I think he made one major tactical error.
Okay, what's that?
Not wearing a bulletproof vest.
Honestly, yeah, being in this situation, he should have had one on all the time.
He knew he couldn't trust his partner.
Protect the center mass.
Yeah. So, definitely a bit of a cliffhanger here at the end. So, heading into that fourth and final part of this book.
I was thinking Charles was dead at this point.
Reasonable thing to believe.
Since you told me that it's those two the whole time, nah, and before I read it, I would have known. Yeah. Not dead.
We open with Astro City. Riots everywhere, it seems like.
Everyone's going crazy. Like, literally, I think we heard about it. Remember when you heard about it. We weren't there. We were too young to experience it. But they talk about the 70s, there was the brownouts in New York, the blackouts, and it was really hot in the summertime, and everyone went insane, and they were beating each other and fighting in the streets. Did you hear about that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was called. But we hear about that time when the blackouts would happen and the rolling brownouts and hot in the summertime.
Well, there have been other times when not just blackouts, but things hit a tipping point and go over. And then there's looting in the streets. There's riots and people go nuts. Mob mentality rules.
Yeah. So literally this is what we're seeing here on the page, which it got very grim. This is the Dark Ages for real.
Yeah. And then we get Jitterjack coming up against Black Velvet, and Deke is on her hit list.
Yes.
She realizes he's working for Deke.
Yep.
Because she's got just a couple of more names to check off before she gets to him.
And at this point, I thought Black Velvet might have the power to take Jitterjack.
Yeah.
But we find out differently.
Then we get a nice, basically a splash page indicating nope, and it looks like he's got the power to take her out.
Yeah, basically to rip out her innards, it seems like.
Because he's two people fused together, but he's not twice as powerful. He's like exponentially as powerful.
So she explodes, essentially, because he sticks his hand up through her abdomen. And when she explodes, that stuff infected the people's mind, that pink, whatever that is. I don't know how to describe that.
It seemed to be an emotional energy of some sort. All of her hate irradiated and infected all of these other people.
Yeah, almost like an emotional spectrum came out of her because she was feeling that, boom, it infected everyone in the entire city. And so that's why they're all beating each other and killing each other in the streets.
Yeah, so to a certain degree, you could argue she inspired the Red Lanterns.
There you go.
Which is kind of wild. And then we get Energy Brown and the Irregulars, the Jade Dragons helping clean up town and stuff like that. And meanwhile, Street Angel is the, what was me, how many did I kill state, and it literally looks like he's about to walk off a building out of remorse.
Yeah, it's like he's going to call it quits, and lo and behold, somebody comes to kind of save the day.
Yeah, it's interesting that we get Silver Agent seeming almost, well, not almost, literally flying in at this point, because I didn't think he had that kind of power before.
Yeah, exactly. And to all the people, I like it. They're like, but he died. And this is so comic booky. Yeah, all the people saw him die, but he has these ability to kind of travel through time. So he didn't really die, you know?
He's traveling through time. I question if he has the ability or if somebody else is moving him through time.
Oh, okay. All right.
But I love how Royal is still at the Down Under Club, and we've got Platypus. He's pacing on his conference room table.
Yeah.
That's how short this guy is. And he's like, here's the keys to the tunneler. Go warm it up in the weapons cache. I'll be there in about 20 minutes. You, me, and Deke, we'll head off. We'll go make new plans. But somebody's plotting against him. He's got to figure out who. Royal's like, I can definitely warm up the tunneler. Definitely get out of town. Taking you and Deke with me? Don't know about that.
Exactly. He's going to look out for number one. And Platypus finally figures out who is setting him up.
Well, he needs a significant amount of help from Deke,
yep.
Who's walking him through. Well, it had to be somebody who knew the crime lords, you know, somebody who had insider knowledge of everything.
And a long working relationship with the pyramid, perhaps.
Yeah. And he's what? Like, who? Oh, you.
Oh, no.
Because the Platypus was never played as stupid, but not also a genius either.
Exactly. He's more a mid-level guy. He never made it to the top ranks of the gang. And probably because he was willing to do the deeds, he's a tough guy who was respected for that, but not necessarily the sharpest tool in the shed, but he's useful.
Well, I mean, he was running this part of town.
Yes, he was.
So he wasn't at the top of the game, but he was upper echelon.
Yeah.
But Deacon is not just moving against Platypus, he's moving against all the crime lords in town.
Everyone, yep.
And it seems like a bad move to be a crime lord in Astro City. It seems like a colossally stupid move to be the crime lord of Astro City.
I would agree. Everyone knows who to go after. You are going to be taken out eventually.
Or they'll figure it out, yeah.
Yeah.
So it turns out that this weapons cache is near a site that Royal had sold the location to Charles's now partner for some beer money as the transfer point. So that is the place he finds Charles having been shot.
Yeah.
So he immediately grabs Charles's radio, calls for help, but hey, the radios are out because all hell's going through town. So Royal, not being an idiot, goes into the weapons cache, pulls out a bunch of weapons. It looks like, I don't know, rocket launchers.
Yeah.
Machine guns. I mean,
mortars. Who knows what these things are? Yeah.
And he's just firing them off, trying to get attention.
Yeah, they look like they have tracers, so it's all in the air. It almost looks like a firework display.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. This is not low-key subtle by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
And I found it wildly ironic that we then cut over to, I guess, Mount Kirby with the First Family's place.
Yeah, it's like, okay, that's a weird place to put this in here. And they're like, this city, there's trouble.
Yeah, the Black Velvet's energy's going nuts. We've got to go do something. Oh, but we've got this new gun. Maybe if I modify it, and in comes Simon Magnus of, are you nuts?
Is this like the ultimate nullifier, I'm guessing?
Yes, that's exactly yes. What I took it to be.
Yeah, me too.
And he's like, I told you it's crazy, dangerous, could wipe out existence itself, and you want to shoot it at the first thing you see? Okay, maybe not, they say, and go after it. And again, we get more kind of fighting and stuff. We've got Hellhound having been turned into a demon or something?
Yeah, it's very weird, but yeah, like a demon. Yeah, a Japanese-looking demon.
Yeah, yeah.
A Chinese dragon with a Japanese face.
Like one of those Oni masks or something like that, maybe?
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
I'm curious if we get enough backstory on Hellhound to get the story of what's really going on there.
Yeah, I had no clue, but that's the best I can guess.
And then in comes a now glowing and emitting lightning Silver Agent who flies up to Black Velvet, saying, I can ease your pain. And she's like, well, will I live through it? And he's like, well, no. It's like, okay, do it.
Good.
Yeah, because she's done. So it seems like he, I guess, kills her, ending the threat. Meanwhile, we cut back to Royal. So again, there's a lot of cross-cutting going on here. Cops come in, throw him up against the wall. He's like, hey, save my brother. He needs an ambulance. And they recognize Charles. he was shot in the back with a 4.5, which clearly isn't any of these big bazooka-type weapons. So they call it in. And this is where sanity starts to reign over Astro City. People are coming out of their rage of, where am I? What's going on? And Silver Agent, it looks like, picks up Jitterjack to get him some medical aid, because he seems to need it and stuff. And this is the point you were talking about, when everybody's crowding around him of, oh, it's time travel. Don't go back. They're going to kill you. They're going to electrocute you. Don't go back.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, oh, don't worry about it. Oh, by the way, I've got a message for the Honor Guard. Have them meet me by the falls at 10:33 on May 3rd, 1982. And it gets better. And then shining bright light and he's gone.
And you're like, what? What happened on May 3rd, 1982? Yeah.
I'm assuming we'll get that in book three or probably four.
Yeah, exactly.
So we then cut to a TV reporter giving us the rundown on people are missing, things are getting cleaned up, and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's kind of wrapping up everything, all the loose ends, telling you how everyone is doing, and you see Charles is alive, too, in the hospital.
Yeah, and the cops were nice enough, because again, it was a different group of cops, to let Royal spend a few minutes with him before he goes in for surgery. And he tells Charles he knows who killed their parents. The guy is alive, and I can identify him.
Which, that is the ultimate cliffhanger. He knows who killed the parents, and did he hear it?
Well, it goes from he barely has a pulse, so is he going to make it to surgery, to his pulse is picking up a strong heartbeat, and Charles now has the will to live.
Now I got something to do. Boom, boom, boom.
So, I mean, a lot happens here.
Yeah, there was a ton. It's just, it's a Charles and Royal story, and they have an interesting story. Not great, but interesting, and it's overall, it's been a good read.
That's the thing, is it's a story with them as the narrators, but I'd argue it's not their story. I mean, there is their subplot of who killed their parents and can they go after him.
Correct, because we're getting gang politics and all kinds of stuff is happening in here. There's tons.
It's the bigger story of what's going on in Astro City at the time of Big Joe, the Apollo 11, the whole Black Velvet stuff, what's going on with the First Family, Dr. Magnus, the Innocent Gun, all those things. And Charles and Royal are the vehicle through which we're seeing the story.
Yeah, exactly.
So I had mixed feelings on that because they're not bad characters, but I don't know if they were the best vantage point.
Yeah, I agree.
I would argue part of why they were not the best vantage point is the repeated need to go to TV reporters, interviews, and news coverage.
Correct. They couldn't tell you through what Royal and Charles are doing, so they have to do the info dumps with the TV, which kind of reminded me of Spawn. Spawn always had everything through the different TV channels giving you info that was going on in the world. And after, let's say, 10, 12 issues of that, I really got irritated with the TV section.
It was also something that was in Dark Knight that I didn't care for.
Dark Knight, too. That's another one. And it didn't get overbearing here, but if we get to book three and we're still getting the TV info dumps, it's going to become a little bit irritating at that point, I think.
Well, because it violates the show don't tell, because all you're doing is showing the telling.
Exactly. Yeah. But overall, I did enjoy this. I enjoyed book two. It was decent. I feel like I've seen stories like this. I mean, we all have. You know, you've seen, you know, whether it's Training Day with Denzel Washington or whatever, we've all seen these stories and they're good. This is one is just in comic book form and you have a lot of superheroes on the side and things going on with that.
Yeah, I mean, the superheroic aspects of it, we've seen aspects of before. Charles's story, to your point, we've seen in movies, TV shows, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Royals is a little less frequently seen.
Yeah, correct. It's not seen as much, but I feel like I've seen stuff like that.
Yeah. So, again, didn't hate it, didn't love it. It was good. I don't think it's a high point of Astro City.
No.
And it came out, first issue was 2006, November 15th. Second issue was February 7th the following year.
Wow.
Then April 25th, and then September 26th.
Wow. So that was almost...
most of a year. 10 months, something like that?
10 months for four issues. That's rough.
So that doesn't build up the story momentum either.
Yeah. But you know what? I hate to say this, but that's kind of seems like it's become status quo for Kurt Busiek. And Astro City, but him too.
You know, it's funny because I've tracked how many weeks apart issues were. And there are some times where, I mean, huge gaps and stuff. But once he got onto that last volume, now granted, there was a nearly 3-year gap between Silver Agent and the volume that ended the series and stuff. But once he started that, most of those came out every 4 or 5 weeks, like clockwork, with only maybe 3 or 4 exceptions. I mean, he had some problems there at the end.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That was Volume 3, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Volume 3 was pretty darn consistent. It felt like a monthly book at that point.
I mean, most of it was monthly. Number 14 came out 9 weeks after 13. Then again, it's 4 or 5 all the way until 38, which was 8 weeks after 37. There was an 18-week gap between issues 40 and 41, but then only 2 to get to 42.
Yeah.
And then it's like 6 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 7 weeks, 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And then 50 was 10 weeks after 49. 51 was 9 weeks after 50, and then 11 weeks to 52. And then it was like 197 weeks until we got the That Was Then special.
Wow. 197 weeks. That's quite a delay.
And, well, that was 2.5 years ago now.
Yeah.
So
it's been forever. So, I mean, I'll tell you what, Volume 3, I remember reading it. I enjoyed it, but I don't remember it that well. So I'm looking forward to getting back to it. And that's where I know I was consistently on it, getting single issues. But this stuff is all still new to me, but I'm enjoying it for what it is. I think it might read better like this than being spread out over 10 months.
I definitely think it reads better this way.
Yeah.
No two ways about it. And we're not that far from that third volume, because we've got Dark Age Book 3 that we'll do next Astro City Spotlight, followed by Book 4 in the following episode. We'll then circle back and do the Samaritan Special and the Beauty Special. Both of those are 40-page stories. And then in Astro City Spotlight, I think it'll be 16 by that point, if my accounting's right. We'll do Astro City Astra 1 and 2. Those are normal length issues. And Silver Agent 1 and 2. But then by Astro City Spotlight 17, we'll be starting that third volume.
Yeah, and that was the one that kept pace and just click, click, click. And I remember reading that because way back then, Drew was your co-host. And you guys got me onto Astro City back then when you could do your reviews in the podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
Just the weekly comic spotlight, you talk about it, and I picked it up because of that.
I mean, as much as I don't think this is a high point of Astro City, even a low point of Astro City is well above most comics' high points in some cases.
Yeah, I would agree. I wasn't bored reading this. I enjoyed myself. It's decent. Well, like you said, not being a high point for Astro City, it's a decent read. I mean, like, these are common things that we've seen before, done in a fun manner in a superhero world. Enjoy it for what it is.
I mean, this is good stuff, but it's got a different feel than Astro City normally has, where we're doing targeted looks at a very specific part of Astro City for a brief time in Tell a Story, Get Out. Now, maybe it takes 2 issues to tell it or something like that, but here we're going over the span of years with these guys. Decades, really, if you go back to the prelude.
Yeah, that's the biggest difference. It feels like most of the Astro City stuff that we read is 1 or 2 issues max. Outside of the Steel guy, I can't remember
Steel
his name.
Jack.
Steel Jack, and I felt like that was long. And that was nowhere near what the Dark Ages is.
But even then, we had 2 or 3 issues that were asides to give the backstory on El Hombre or whoever some of those other people were.
Exactly, yeah.
So the fact that we're focusing on these two guys for the Dark Ages, plus the prelude to it that was the Astro City part of the Astro City Aerosmith flipbook.
Yep.
This is going on for a while.
Yes, it is.
It's not bad. It's just not the story I wish they were telling. I would have rather it gone straight to Volume 3, I think, versus having the Dark Ages, personally.
Yeah, with the amount of time that the creators spent on this, I felt like they could have done a lot more Astro City issues with like those small done-in-one stories that I would have enjoyed a lot more.
Yeah, if they had spent these 16 issues doing 8 2-part stories or something like that.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah.
And easier to digest.
I guess it's the opportunity cost that is part of why I think Astro City Dark Age doesn't have the best reputation.
Yeah, I see where you're going there.
Again, it's fine stuff. I just want great stuff, as I often get out of this series.
Me too. And on to the third volume, or the third book.
Yeah, we'll do third book next, then we'll go to the fourth, and then, like I said, we'll circle back to some of those specials that were in between.
Exactly. Cool.
Anything else?
Nah, that does it for me.
Cool.
Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the Preview Spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next Preview Spotlight.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.